Radio Prague News.
The head of the Road and Motorway Directorate has been sacked for the slow pace of road construction. Social Democrat leader Jan Hamáček says he has no plans to dismiss the embattled culture minister. And the Senate wants to scrap a law that forces big stores to close on public holidays. The newly appointed Transport Minister, Vladimir Kremlík, has sacked the head of the Road and Motorway Directorate, Jan Krupa, for the slow pace of road construction and persisting problems with the reconstruction of the country's D1 highway from Prague to Brno. Krupa has been in office since 2014. He is to be replaced by Pavel Kováčik, head of the Supervisory Council of the State Fund for Transport Infrastructure. The head of the Social Democratic Party, Jan Hamáček, has no plans to sack Culture Minister Antonín Staněk, even after meeting with leading signatories of a petition calling for his dismissal over the sacking of the head of the Czech National Gallery, Jiří Fajt, and the head of the Olomouc Museum of Arts, Michal Soukup. Critics claim the sackings were a political decision, and 5,000 people have now signed a petition for the Culture Minister's dismissal. Party leader Jan Hamáček said after the meeting he was in favour of holding an open competition for the two posts as soon as possible. Minister Staněk sacked the two heads, citing the outcome of audits at their respective galleries. The Senate has moved to scrap a law according to which large retail outlets must remain closed on selected public holidays. The proposal was included in an amendment to the law, which will now go back to the Chamber of Deputies. The lower house previously rejected a similar proposal, including a proposal for the ban to be extended to all public holidays. The law, which went into force in 2016, bans outlets bigger than 200 square metres from selling goods on 8 public holidays of the year, among them October 28th, Christmas, Easter Monday and May the 8th. It is still vehemently opposed by the Czech Chamber of Commerce and the Association of Trade and Tourism, which says it discriminates large sales outlets. The Czech National Bank has lowered its forecast for the development of public finances in 2019 and 2020 in its inflation report summary published on Friday. The bank now expects a surplus of 0.3% of GDP in 2019 as opposed to February's more optimistic estimate of 1.2%. The new expectations for 2020 have gone down even more sharply from February's 1.3% to the current forecast of 0.2%. This year, public debt is expected to sink from 32.7% of GDP to 30.9%. Next year, a further decrease to 29.3% is forecast. Prague has come out on top in a worldwide study conducted by appjobs.com, a popular website and app that focuses on helping students find part-time work. The Czech capital beat Moscow and Berlin to the top spot. AppJobs created the ranking based on 5 indicators: the average monthly rent, the ease of finding part-time jobs, the cost of a pint, as well as the number of concerts and shows in the city, and the amount of universities the city has. Prague scored particularly highly in the low cost of rent and beer. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Saturday should be partly cloudy to overcast with rain in places and day temperatures between 8 and 12 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hi there, you're listening to Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, a conference in Prague seeks to find consensus on approaching future cyber threats. Personal items belonging to late President Eduard Beneš are handed over to the Czech National Museum. And later, the Prague Orchestra that's incorporating monthly emergency siren tests into their music. All that's coming up in today's program. Leading experts on cybersecurity from 32 countries are meeting in Prague at the 5G Security Conference held under the auspices of the Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš. It's hoped that the meeting can produce a series of consensual recommendations on how to approach future cyber threats emerging from the 5G network. And Tom McEncrow has the story.
Over the past several years, we have seen a big growth in communication technologies and systems. And this trend will continue with the development and deployment of the fifth generation of network 5G, which will transform fundamentally the way we communicate and the way we live.
Launching the government's Prague 5 security conference on Thursday, Andrej Babiš emphasized the revolutionary nature of 5G. The packet of new systems promises a vast expansion to the capabilities of wireless devices, expanding bandwidth from today's 10 or 20 megabytes per second to up to 20 gigabytes. This potential is expected to bring about major changes not just in the use of technologies such as self-driving cars and home appliances, but also in governance. But experts and intelligence agencies have been warning for years of the security risks involved in adopting the new network technology. Particularly noticeable have been the ongoing efforts of the United States to persuade their allies not to involve Chinese companies in their 5G infrastructure for fear their technology could be used for spying. Yet while Australia and New Zealand have already announced they will avoid Huawei products in their 5G infrastructure development, Britain and Germany have signalled the opposite. Building a path towards a consensus in 5G security is therefore one of the main reasons why the Czech Prime Minister decided to hold the two-day conference. It is hoped that the Prague meeting of over 150 experts and representatives from the Western world can produce an agreement on recommendations that will be used when discussing the future approaches within EU, NATO and the UN. However, Czech leaders are also split on the issue. Mr. Babiš's government has listened to the warning of the country's National Cyber and Information Security Agency regarding the use of Huawei technologies in critical infrastructure and commissioned a cybersecurity audit. But Czech President Miloš Zeman has defended the Chinese tech giant, stressing that they are leaders in the field and, according to the Weekly Respect, urged Mr. Babiš to include Chinese company representatives at the conference. But the importance of inviting allies was stressed by the Foreign Minister, Tomáš Petříček, whose ministry is hosting the event.
At this conference, we are contemplating the model of cooperation among countries in an era where absolute trust is necessary. The countries on which we might become technologically dependent must be trusted and reliable.
While parts of the conference are available for public viewing on the website of the Office of the Government, the most important security concerns are being discussed in private. Nevertheless, the conference did produce an important statement from the Prime Minister when it comes to domestic affairs. On Thursday, he announced that mobile operators are expected to set up their 5G networks in the Czech Republic by 2024. This will be preceded by a frequency auction in November and the subsequent division of frequency bands in 2020.
That report was by Tom McEncrow. Now, personal items belonging to the second Czechoslovak president, Edvard Beneš, and his wife Hanna, including his shaving kit and walking stick, have become part of the collection of the Czech National Museum in Prague. The items were donated to the museum by Hanna Benešová's relatives, who live in the US. Ruth Frankova has more.
The National Museum received some 70 items that belonged to Edvard Beneš and his wife, including a tea set given to the couple by the first Czechoslovak president, Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk. The Czech Minister of Culture and the head of the National Museum received the inheritance at the Czech Embassy in Washington on Thursday from the hands of the great-granddaughter of Hanna Benešová's brother, Regina Pólová, who emigrated to the United States in 1986. She says it won't be easy to part with the items which have become part of her life.
My mum grew up with her aunt Hanna Benešová. She was actually called Hanna after her. Since the Beneš couple didn't have any children, they were very close to my family. These items really mean a great deal to us, and we still use many of them today. For instance, when my boys are ill, we would use the president's handkerchiefs to cool their foreheads. They're really of very high quality. So we have really been surrounded by these things, but at the same time, we're happy that they will be displayed in the museum and returned to the Czech nation, because that's where they belong.
Ale my jsme rádi, že jdou do muzea zpátky do českého národu, protože tam patří.
The ceremony at the Czech embassy in Washington was accompanied by a small exhibition showcasing Hanna Benešová's fabulous outfits. Miroslava Burianová, the curator of the National Museum's fashion collection, says they have been preserved in excellent condition.
We're
showcasing her fur coat, which was one of her favorite items. Then there is an evening gown, which she wore as the First Lady, and a nightgown, an item from her private life. I think no one had ever seen Hanna Benešová in a nightgown, except perhaps the president himself. She really made sure she looked like a lady from very early morning. There is also a traditional Bulgarian coat, which she probably received as a gift. Etnografický bulharský kabátek, který
dostala zřejmě darem. Head of the National Museum Michal Lukeš says that until now there have been very few items in Czech museum collections related to the second Czechoslovak president and his wife.
We have had almost no items belonging to Hanna Benešová in our collections. The objects we have received are all the more valuable because of their personal nature, because they were really used by President Beneš. They are really his iconic items, such as his shaving kit or his hat.
The heritage of the second Czechoslovak president Edvard Beneš and his wife Hanna should go on display at the National Museum in Prague in November as part of an exhibition dedicated to the 20th century.
Thank you for that report, Ruth Frankova. Now, the Prague-based Berg Orchestra, known for its unique approach to contemporary music, has come up with a new project called Hudba ke Sireně, or Music for the Siren. The series of micro-concerts performed live every first Wednesday of the month incorporate Prague's regular testing of sirens in the music. Ruth Frankova has more.
Visitors to the Czech capital may be a bit alarmed if they happen to visit the city on the first Wednesday of the month, when sirens around Prague suddenly go off at noon. But for most Prague locals, the sound has become so common that they barely pay attention to it. The monthly testing of the citywide emergency siren system was introduced back in 2002 by the Ministry of Interior. The siren test occurs without fail at exactly 12 o'clock on the first Wednesday of every month. While for most Praguers the siren is just a part of the city's noisy soundscape, musicians from the Berg Orchestra regard it as an unusual sound that could be used in music either as a backdrop or as an instrument of its own. In their new project called Hudba k Sireně, or Music for the Siren, they approached a number of contemporary Czech musicians, asking them to compose a piece that would include the sound of a siren in one way or another. The compositions are performed live every first Wednesday of the month at various locations in Prague. The first concert of the series, Music for the Siren, took place in March. Musicians performed a piece by Miroslav Budlák to a packed auditorium of the Philosophical Faculty of Charles University in Prague. Eva Keslová, head of the Berg Orchestra, says they have been discussing the idea for the project for several years. But it was only when they heard the news that the monthly testing of sirens could soon be abolished that they decided to finally make it happen.
We understand it as, promotion of contemporary music or promotion of unusual sounds, because it's a catchy concept, you know, to make a very short concert together with a test of sirens, and it could attract attention, and it does. And therefore, you know, if contemporary composers take part, it's promotion of contemporary music, basically.
And what kind of role does the sound of siren actually play in the music? Do you regard it as a as an instrument of its kind?
Every composer has a different concept. For one of the composers, it might be a musical instrument that sounds together with other instruments. For another, it is some kind of final touch on his own work. This happened together with the first, very first concert, that there was a composition leading towards the sound of sirens. So every composer treats the siren in his own way.
Every concert takes place at a different place. So is it important for you where the concert actually happens?
Yes, the location is very important, but we choose the location according to the concept. We approached almost 24 of composers, and each of them was free to choose his or her own concept, and the place fits within the concept. So when the composer wants to hear not only one, but a few sirens, we have to search for a location that enables that. Or if the composer needs the siren to be really close, then we have to look for such a space. So the concept leads everything.
Was it difficult to find composers who would cooperate with you? What was their initial reaction when you approached them with this idea?
For us, it's not really difficult because the Berg Orchestra has been here for quite a long time. We have been working with contemporary composers. I could say we know most of them in person. So for us, it was not really difficult to choose the composers because we knew which of them would not like to work on such a project. But these are maybe two or three of those we know, because it's a very unusual thing and it gives the composer the occasion to think different, to think out of the box, to try out something new. So no, we only had, I think, one or two no's from our composers.
And finally, what kind of reaction have you received from the public so far?
So far, the reactions are really enthusiastic. I was really personally overwhelmed by the great reactions. So, well, I'm crossing my fingers for the future. You never know, but I hope it will really open ears of maybe people who don't usually listen to contemporary music.
The most recent in the series of concerts took place this Wednesday on the 1st of May at Prague's Bastion, which is part of the city's New Town Gothic fortifications. The performers were stationed on an iron spiral staircase leading to the Bastion, while the visitors were seated in a small yard below. The author of the concert called May Siren with a Walk was a young Czech composer, Ian Mikiska. I spoke to him right after the concert and I first asked him why he decided to take part in the project.
From when I went to school, it was always an event. Every first Wednesday it would be the same lesson where the siren would happen. And I think it was so loud at the school that there was nothing to do except open the windows and listen for a few minutes. And that was a really nice event. And I actually, one of my best experiences with the siren happened here. I had a friend staying with me from the UK, and we went for a long walk for about 2 hours, and we ended up here just before midday, and I didn't know it was an accident. And we were up on the Bastion, where sort of the top of the staircase where the piece took place, and it's a really fantastic combination of several sirens. You have a few in Nusla, a few here in Albertov with the university complex, and a few in Vinohrady that you hear, and you hear a big sort of cloud of sirens, and that sound is really intoxicating in a way. So that's why I wanted to do it here.
So when you were composing the piece, you were already thinking about this particular location?
Absolutely, yeah. We had a few options for where it could be. I had an idea of what I wanted the piece to be like, but that also changed considerably. First, we wanted to do it in a place in Maastrana, where there'll be a different siren, and there was a church bell, a really prominent church bell, is the source for a lot of the guitar material and this regular pulsation. And here, there are lots of church bells, but they're further away, so the whole thing has to be set up a little differently. So I was always I was thinking about the place when I was composing, but I was also delaying decisions based on the final confirmation of where the piece would actually take place.
And what does the sound of siren mean for you? Do you regard it as an instrument of its own?
Well, I think not so much an instrument as really a sound event, something that involves pretty much everyone within earshot. And I also think you put the question very nicely, what does a siren mean? And I think what's important about it is that, of course, it means something. It means that we're testing a system that is created in order to ensure safety in crisis situations. But at the same time, it is this big, prominent event that... And I think a lot of listening and a lot of work in sound from John Cage onwards kind of focuses on listening as a way to kind of go beyond meaning into listening into the material of sound, into the experience, the perception of it. And I think the siren is an excellent opportunity for that, because it's something that you immediately connect with references in your mind, but it lasts for so long and it doesn't change that it kind of forces you to listen in and to sort of go beyond that warning meaning, beyond the danger signal, and go into the sound.
And finally, this is not just an ordinary first Wednesday of a month. It's the 1st of May. Is this just a coincidence, or did you know that your composition will sound on the 1st of May?
I knew that I wanted to do it somewhere not so urban. I didn't want to do it in the midst of buildings, in the midst of Prague. And we talked with Eva Kislova, the director of Berg, about where we could do it, how we could make sense, that it has to be somewhere that people have to go a little further, then we need to create something that will take them there. The way it was presented right from the beginning is that, well, if we're going to do it somewhere outside, then we should make it a trip, and if we're going to make it a trip, it shouldn't be a working day, and the only Wednesday that isn't a working day is the 1st of May.
What do you want people to take from this event? What's the main aim of this whole project for you personally?
I think really the very basic fact of... just noticing it a little differently next time and hearing it, knowing that there are people like me and others who think it's worthwhile to spend those 220 seconds listening.
The project Hudba k Sireně currently includes at least 16 concerts. The head of the Berg Orchestra, Eva Keslová, says they have already approached other organizations that could develop on the idea in the future, or could take a chosen composition and bring it to local audiences. The next concert in the series, this time composed by Martin Klusák, will take place on Wednesday, the 5th of June, at Prague's Jan Kepler Gymnasium.
That report was by Ruth Frankova, and I'm afraid it's all we have time for on today's programme. Please send any comments you may have to english@radio.cz. And you'll also find us, of course, on Twitter, on Facebook and on Instagram. But for now, from me, Ian Willoughby, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you for listening, folks, and speak to you soon.